Shave or Die gets underway today. We've been talking about it all morning. Shave or Die 2014, celebrating 5 years in aid of the Irish Cancer Society. And to make it the biggest year yet, we need heads. We are head hunting. We need your head. Help beat cancer by donating yours. You can head... over to TodayFM. I'd say it took them a week to come up with that one. Head over to todayfm.com or text SHAVE, S-H-A-V-E, to 50300. Okay, 50300 to donate €2, and 100% of your donation will go to the Irish Cancer Society. You know what? It's Monday, and you will feel so good about yourself if the one thing you do today is text the word SHAVE to 50300.
And it is the beginning of Shave or Die 2014, celebrating 5 years. And the fact that we've raised, all of us have raised 6.1 million over the last four outings. So we're hoping to do great stuff this year. And we have more details about how you can be involved. We're hunting for your head, high and low. Heads wanted. We have cancer in our sights. They're all the taglines. We'll tell you more about that throughout the show today. Anyway, 53102 or raytodayfm.com. Good morning. This is very sad. This year, not last year, but the year before, as part of Shave or Die, we spoke to Paul and Maeve Glover. And we spoke to them as part of our outside broadcast from the Style Club on the morning of our world record attempt. And as we've done over the last few Shave or Dies, we spoke to people who were either recovered from cancer or going through treatment. And Paul at the time was going through treatment, and Maeve, his wife, had sent us an email in on the Wednesday of that week telling us about Paul, and we invited both of them in, and we spoke to them at length. Well, we got news during the week that Paul died last weekend, and at the time we were told that the cancer was incurable, and it proved to be that. And a number of his family and friends have asked us to remember him today, and it's our pleasure to do so. So I suppose the best way is to go back to that Friday, February the 18th, 2011, when Paul and Maeve came into us, and this is how it went. And then we'll play a little bit of music in the memory of Paul Glover.
We've been talking to people all week who are getting involved in this for various reasons, and we got an email in, I think it was Wednesday there, from Maeve, and I'll just read it to you. We have Maeve here with her husband Paul. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Yeah, yeah, right.
So, dear A Gang, I would like to put my gorgeous husband forward for Shave or Die. There he is. Is he gorgeous? Yeah, the ladies agree, yes.
Thank you.
Paul was diagnosed with an incurable cancer 2 years ago. He is due to start another round of chemo in March, April. This is why he feels he should put himself forward instead of me, as he will lose his hair anyway. And it's a free haircut, says Paul.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Paul, the most selfless person I know and a total inspiration. We've been through every emotion possible, but have come out the other end, smiling. This is due to his fun-loving ways and his huge zest for life. His positive outlook is just incredible, and this is what gets him up every morning. We've had many a heart-to-heart over the last few months, and the thing that kept popping up was the loss of his hair. Nothing to do with the grueling chemo or the long hospital stays, it was all about his hair. And when he looked in the mirror, he saw a stranger looking back when he was bald the last time. As long as he was hairless, he was sick. That's his words. Paul's hair has grown back. He now sports an action man look, 1970s model, and looking amazing. She does love you, doesn't she, Paul? Yes.
Is this recorded?
Yeah. Hope you've not filled your quota and have room for one more head. Look forward to hearing from you. That's Maeve and Paul. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Ray. How you doing?
Lovely heartfelt email. On those difficult days, you can play that back to
absolutely,
Maeve.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Paul passed away last Saturday. Our thoughts are with his wife, Maeve, who was there on that day, and his three children, Olan, Sive and Roisin, and his father and mother, George and Phyllis, sister, Deborah, and brothers, Ger and Alan, and extended family, and his many, many friends. And we dedicate this from the Furies, Lonesome Boatman.
We're here with some incredible students who have been taking part in Shave or Die all morning. Can I just give you some good news? So far, and we're only, 25 minutes into the show, so far, this school has raised €2,100. Amazing. Before 2:30 today, we are hoping to double, even treble that money. So well done, everyone. Give yourself a massive round of applause. That's excellent work. Lenny, let's check the pot and see how we're doing. We were over €4,000 the last time. Let's see what we're doing here. €4,700 from this school so far. Anybody want to give us a hand, shave some teachers? I can't hear you. Is there any particular teacher that you would like to shave? Old Curly Bob himself, yeah? We're going to do this in 10 minutes. Are you ready?
Unfortunately, we knew from the outset, once they came back with results, that it was grade three. There are, from memory, four grades, one being benign, two being a problem, three being not so great, and four being a major terminal illness. And the problem is that they quite often come back, and they come back at the next grade. So we knew that the prognosis was not good long term, though we were kind of told that it was maybe five, but maybe as long as 25 years before it would make another kind of stance against us as such. Unfortunately, again, I was pregnant on our second child when it presented itself due to just ongoing observational scans.
How many years on from that, from the original diagnosis?
It was nearly 4 years almost. So it was decided, because it was what they call just growing, just doing stuff, that they would wait, and that was, I think, discovered in the early kind of, say, October, and then Ella was born in March, and they decided to start with radiotherapy thereafter, the Christmas that Ella was born. So he started in November and finished Christmas week, and suffered delayed fatigue thereafter, and that was very tough. That was very, very tough with a new baby and a little boy and all the rest of it. That was very, very tough, because Tadhg had just started school. He was four and a bit at this stage, so we would drop him to school and then drive up to St. Luke's. We live in Wexford, or lived in Wexford, should I say, and we would drive up to St. Luke's. Al would do his session, and then we would drive home and be back in time to pick up Tadhg from school.
So that have been so tough.
It was horrific. It was 6 weeks, but it was possibly the longest 6 weeks, in amongst other long periods as well. But it was very hard going, and that was part of the fatigue as well for all of us. And we were offered a great many things, like St. Luke's has the potential for you to stay there as a family within the units that they have, if you so wish. But because we were trying to maintain as best possible a normal environment for Tadhg, who had just started school, and for Ella, who was oblivious to it all, it just seemed better for us to try and just do the 5 day week and at home then at the weekends.
And how did that treatment work out?
It did a little bit. It just stalled the ball for a time. Unfortunately, then when Ella was about three, again, it was cyclical. About every 3 years, roughly, something was happening. And when it kicked off again, we knew it was coming, because Alan had been working, had been striving and thriving, and all of a sudden he was having difficulties again. The seizures were breaking through, and he was still on heavy medication for that. And again, that's the indicator that you know something's not right. So just prior to Christmas 2008, he had some major episodes, and thereafter things started to go downhill. By Christmas itself, he was very shaky on his feet, still very with it mentally, but just coordination wasn't great. And by March, he was in a wheelchair, March 2009.
Was it then, caring for him at home? Or did you do it at home when you had two small children?
Yes, we did. And that was a decision which was needed for me, for the children, for our family, for us. It worked for us, not for everybody, but because of the fact that the family unit was so important to us, we were able to do it at home. And it meant that Alan, even though he was on the decline, was still very much part of the family unit. He was still dad to Tadhg and Ella, and they were oblivious to the long-term prognosis, or short-term at this stage, but he was still very much in their lives and active, so it was important for us. So yeah, we turned everything upside down so as to allow that to happen, and we had great support. I had fabulous support from friends and family, of course, and then from the care teams, palliative care and such around the area. Without them, it's the secondary and tertiary kind of groups, the people that come in and say, do you know what, sit down, I'm going to make a cup of tea, I'm going to rub your feet. You know, I never wanted reflexology in my life, but all of a sudden I was having these sessions in my kitchen, you know. And it was those little things. It was being done for him, for Al, and for me, and it was very necessary, because it became very stressful, you know, for Alan, because he was relying on me not only as his carer and his partner, but I was also the point of reference and information for all of these medical peoples, for family, for friends. So, I mean, at the best of times, I'm like a goldfish, so it kind of comes and it goes. If I can regurgitate it properly when it's needed, that's fine. But for that time, I had to hold on to all sorts of information from, you know, medical charts, things that he was allergic to, things that he was on, and the ever-changing kind of medicines that he was taking at the time.
How have you managed to cope since you lost him?
Having the two children really is the only thing that I think got me through the whole thing. And that's, thinking about them is difficult.
What age are they now?
Tyke is in fifth class and he is 11. And, Ella is 7. And
do you talk to them a lot about their daddy?
All the time. They would kill you, to be honest. That's possibly some of the hardest part, or possibly the hardest part of grieving, is because they were so young when he passed, particularly Ella. I have to go over that with her on a regular basis. So the scar or the scab gets rubbed and scrubbed quite often. And I have to do that because they need more questions answered, particularly as Ella developed, because she was so, so young when her dad passed away. So, yeah, that was tough, very, very tough. But as I say, I had a huge circle of friends, Alan's friends and our family. We had a living wake for Alan. So we all came together, and there was genuinely hundreds of us in a field in Wexford, with bonfires and tents and you name it. And Alan's business was costumed characters, historical stuff, supplying of all sorts of weird and wonderful things. So I had hospitallers and knights and all sorts at this, in amongst all the cousins and aunts and uncles of various ages.
And what did they make of it?
They loved it. I had cousins coming out in blankets and broomsticks trying to get in on the act, and it was fabulous. And it was possibly one of the most important productive things we did, because it was very positive, not only for us, who knew, everybody knew what we were facing, but it gave everybody a chance to just say goodbye in a really nice way.
This is our fifth year doing Sid Shave or Die. It's your first year talking, really, isn't it?
About your experience. Yeah. I'm a funny one. Those that know me, I'm very open about it, but obviously you don't walk around and, you know, tell everybody your business. And I don't know, I didn't want to, this is not my story, it's just part of my story, but at the same time, Alan deserves to be remembered. And it's really important for the children, as I mentioned.
Yeah, but isn't it, see, cancer, it strikes me, it's not just the story, obviously, of the person who has it, to whom it is most important, but there are people around who depend on the person who is ill. We're going to miss the person who is ill if the person doesn't survive the cancer.
Cancer is insidious. It is crap. It interferes with your life. It takes over. For good or bad, the biggest thing that cancer does is create fear. Fear of the unknown, fear of the known. And you deal with your own fears, with the fears of your partner or the person you're caring for. All of the people then who are looking to you for information, fear is the biggest thing. And I like to be informed, so that was okay with me. I was able to compartmentalise and get all that information. Other people weren't able to cope with that, you know, but fear is the big thing. And of course, what you want when you're dealing with terminal illness is time. So when fear is eating into that valuable time, it's a very tough place to be.
Jessica De Burka, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us and talk to us about Alan. And we appreciate you doing so, but it is important to help in the fundraising for Shave or Die, because we are trying to make it the biggest year yet. And you can help beat cancer by donating your head. Head over to todayfm.com or text SHAVE to 50300 and you'll donate €2. All of the money from the text goes to the Irish Cancer Society.
Well, about 5 years ago, my nanny passed away from cancer, unfortunately. She had throat cancer. I think like any money that we can raise towards helping cancer is going to make a big difference, to make it like a less scary kind of thing for people going through it, you know?
Yeah.
And kind of mean that more people can get through and see the other side of it.
You were very close.
Yeah.
Okay. 5 years ago is a long time. I suppose it's the memory of her. That's the reason you're doing it today.
Yeah, it is definitely. You know, I think like it's still a very strong memory. You know, even though it's 5 years ago, you know, it's thinking of her all the time. You know,
and you know the money that you're all going to raise here today is going to do incredible work.
Yeah.
So you should all, I think you and the rest of this amazing college should be really proud of what you're doing today.
Yeah, no, it's really great, you know, like, because all this money is going to help go towards research, you know, to mean that we could, might be able to find a cure or even make the treatment, like, better and easier for people to go through, you know, which is a great cause, I think.
And we're going to get out on the final amount. You guys today have raised €8,400 for Shaver Dye 2014. Thank you so much for coming out. Tony Fenton is next. See you later, everyone.
Right, so that's it. Ray Darcy coming live. You can watch it, streaming it at todayfm.com. But most importantly, as always, listen to it on the radio here on Today FM.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Oh. Yeah, good morning. We're broadcasting live from the Mansion House here in Dublin City Centre. We're actually in the Round Room, which is amazing. And I'm in the company of 400 very special people. Give yourselves a round of applause. Oh, I just want to tell you a little story. Back in around October of 2009, Jill Waters went around the Open Plan Today FM office to myself and Ian Dempsey and Paul McLoone and Tony Fenton, said, look, I have this idea. Would you mind, say, next year sometime, shaving all your hair off or dyeing your hair? And, you know, in a radio station, you can imagine people come around with daft ideas all the time, and usually you just say, yeah, and you presume it's never going to happen. So I just say, ah, yeah, whatever, Jill. Go on. Dream away there, dream away. Anyway, Jill set about organising the very first Shave or Dye. Here we are celebrating the fifth Shave or Dye. Yeah. That's impressive, but over the 5 years, you and people like you have raised €6.1 million for the Irish Cancer Society. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. What age are you?
10.
Where are you from?
Wexford.
Whereabouts in Wexford?
Town.
Now, yeah, that's fine. It wasn't a trick question. Look at his hair, lads. Ah, look at that. Describe your hair to people at home who are listening on the radio.
It's very bushy and curly.
Yeah, it is. And where are you going to let somebody shave that off, Oren?
Because two of my grandads were diagnosed with cancer. One died. That was on my mom's side. Both of them were diagnosed on the same day.
Right.
One of them died 6 months later. And one of them survived.
Right. And you're going to give up that. What do your friends think about you getting your head shaved?
Don't know, they never really said anything to me. I just say that's going to be weird. Yeah,
so you went on your midterm with that lovely head of bushy, curly hair, and you're going to arrive back on Monday with none.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's going on. You're going to have a lot of news to tell, aren't you?
Yeah.
How much have you raised so far?
€250.
Oren from Wexford Town. Well done, Oren. Now, these are the Bates sisters from Sutton in Dublin.
Yeah.
Paula, how are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Niamh, how are you?
Hi, Ray, how are you?
And there is a third sister, Gráinne.
Yeah, she went to buy a hat.
So why are the Bates sisters doing it?
My mum was diagnosed with cancer in December, and she had her stomach removed in January, and she got the all clear this week.
Yay! And what's her name?
Bibi.
I believe Bibi wanted to be here to get her head shaved.
She did yesterday. She was like, I'm going to shave my head too. And I was like, ma'am, it's kind of organised and you have to fill out an application form, so I don't think so.
So she's listening at home.
She is.
Good morning, Bibi.
Hiya, ma'am.
Now, how much have you raised, Niamh?
2,000.
Wow.
So far. Yeah. And we're going to get more.
What's the target?
€5,000
they're going to make. Thanks very much to the Bates sisters from Sutton. We're here broadcasting live from the Round Room in the Mansion House. You can see us on todayfm.com. You can text us as normal, 53102, or you can send us emails to live@todayfm.com.
My son here is beside me, and we're both wearing Amy's picture on our T-shirts. She passed away 2.5 years ago with a rare form of cancer. And next month would have been her 21st birthday, so we're going to mark that by having a family head shave, myself, my son and my husband.
Great.
And that'll be in the 5th on Teeling in Sligo.
Amazingly beautiful young lady.
Always smiling, whether she had hair or not.
Yeah. 2.5 years ago.
Yep.
And when was she diagnosed?
She was diagnosed 13 months before that. Yeah. So it was just a very aggressive chemo she had to go through and surgery, but unfortunately it was just nothing they could do for her.
Yeah, I'd say you think about her every day.
Every single minute.
Yeah. Yep. Give us a hug.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming up.
Bruce ended up having to shave his own hair anyway when he started to lose it through the radiotherapy and the chemotherapy. And we always said, though, we'd have loved to have come up and done it here. And so I'm doing it this year. I'm doing it for him. I'm doing it in his memory.
Dedicated to Bruce.
Yeah. And to try and raise some funds for the Irish Cancer Society. Right.
And did you use the services of the Irish Cancer Society?
We did. We had a night nurse with us the night Bruce passed away, and that was provided by them. And she was brilliant. She was great, just to have her there. Somebody who knew what to do and what was going on. And
How are you?
I am okay. I have my good days and my bad days.
Yeah,
I miss him a lot.
He sounds like an amazing man.
Oh, he was. He was.
And when we spoke to Paul and Maeve back in 2011, Paul was about to undergo another bout of chemo, and he decided to shave his head for Shave or Die and sort of take control of the hair loss. And he raised a lot of funds at the time doing that. He told us at the time that his cancer was incurable. Well, sadly, Paul didn't make it. He passed away at 11:57 on Saturday, 29th of June last year, leaving Maeve, his wife and partner for 30 years, and his three children, Sive and Roisin and Olan, behind. And the family join us in the room here in the Fire restaurant. Good morning, Maeve.
Morning, Ray.
Roisin, morning.
Morning.
Olan, how are you doing?
Good.
And Sive. Now, I remember distinctly, because we had spoken to you before we went to the Style Club or spoken about you, and then we met you. Paul was a handsome, very handsome man, full head of dark hair. You were obviously madly in love. And at the time, the children weren't aware of how serious the whole thing was.
I don't think they were aware. Sive has since said that they were, obviously with access to Google and what have you, they were doing research that we weren't aware of. So certainly the severity of it, they wouldn't have. But they knew he'd cancer. Didn't know it was terminal.
Yeah.
That word we never kind of mentioned to them, because Paul insisted that their life went on as normal. We maintained that, really.
And that was it, because I remember him talking about it wasn't about, say, or jumping out of a plane or visiting some far-flung climb. It was about just doing the everyday things well.
That's what he said. I remember, because it is a shock initially when you're told, and I asked him, like, was there anything that he wanted to do? And he said, and that came up in the previous interview, was really to watch his girls play hockey or Olin play rugby. And he said that's really what he wanted to do. He didn't have any crazy dreams or ambitions to do.
Yeah.
You know, which you'd imagine, as I said, you see the books with 101 things to do before you die, but that really doesn't come into it.
So it's just to cherish the time you have left.
The things that we take for granted every day, whether it's getting up, having breakfast with your family, or going for a walk down the beach, the little things that you just don't think about, and that's really what he wanted.
You were childhood sweethearts.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. When did you first meet?
I would have been 14, 15, it was 1983. And similar to Linda's story, I knew a mate of his from school, and I was absolutely mad about him, and I got in touch with this guy, Peter, and I said, please, I said, go over and ask him, will he come out with me? Which he did. So, yeah, that was the start of it, yeah.
Yeah, Roisin, it's hard to believe now that your age, your mum and dad met, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's crazy. So you were soulmates and best friends, and that was what was so lovely about when we were talking to you, just so madly in love. And it wasn't that he was in denial, he was just getting on with it.
He totally accepted from day one. Possibly thought he was going to die, he'd never said it. He'd incredible faith, which I didn't have, and maybe spiritually, but not Catholic faith as such, which he kept really private. I was aware of it, but a lot of other people wouldn't have been. So he'd no fear of death at all, whatsoever, which I think is incredible. Always said that he was so happy that it was him, not me, or the kids, or his parents. So I think that really showed how selfless he was.
And you went to London because you were obviously when you're in that situation, you'll do anything to try and find a cure.
Yeah.
And when you went there and you got the results, he was told that this is it.
Carson's. He was given a year. Now, obviously, again, we didn't say that, but at that time he was given a year to live. But it had such, as he said, like, where there's life, there's hope. And I really feel that he thought he would have got through it.
Yeah. And he thanked you for marrying him.
Yeah, which was mental.
He just kept saying, thank you.
Yeah, unbelievable. Because I remember the first thing he said, we came out of the Mars and they'd given us the news. Abercrombie at the time hadn't opened in Dublin, and the first place he went was to buy hoodies. And then he saw the prize, guys, and we didn't buy them.
All right.
That was typical Roisin. But I remember standing in Abercrombie and thinking, is this for real? Unbelievable. And his priorities were always myself and the three kids. Yeah. But he never bought
Didn't get you the hoodies. You can buy them in Dublin now.
You get them now, yeah.
And just in his final days then, in June of last year, it was last year, yeah, that you thought he was still alive, but for you, he was gone. And so you went home to the house.
That was when he was taken to hospital, Ray. I thought he was sick. It was Olin's 13th birthday on the 26th of June, and he had a load of kids staying over. And again, I didn't want it to happen because Paul, at that stage, he was tired. Nothing more than really just wrecked. I think he had it. But again, I wasn't aware that this was it. So we got up the next morning after the last child had left, and he asked to go to the hospital. And his Alan, who I have to say was an absolute rock for Paul and myself and the kids, he's now emigrated to Australia, and I know he's listening. So hi, Alan. He went to hospital on the Thursday. Obviously, I went in with him Thursday. They had him, it took about 8 or 9 hours to stabilise him, to get rid of the pain. And I remember saying, giving out reams to one of the nurses, saying, you know, give him enough medication, but leave him conscious so that we can communicate. And then I looked at her and she said, Maeve, she said, he's dying. I was totally unaware.
For our fifth world record attempt, we have 400 people here or thereabouts, right? We're colour-coded. The people in the light blue t-shirts are the barbers, and the people in the dark blue t-shirts are the shavees. So give yourselves a round of applause, yeah? Okay, we're ready for a world record attempt. Anna Orford from Guinness World Records is here. How are you, Anna?
How are you?
How's your clicker?
My clicker's good. It's at 179 for the moment.
Right, what happens after we do the head shaving?
So, what? 3, 2, 1, go. We shave heads. If there's anybody who doesn't quite, you know, carry through the record, I'm going to have to disqualify them, so I'm going to do a quick count afterwards, but hopefully I shouldn't have to discount too many people, if any at all.
Okay, so you do the count, you come back up here to me.
Correct.
And then you say, da-da-da-da-da.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Okay, I'm looking forward to the da-da-da-da-da.
Me too.
This is what we're here for. We're here for the da-da-da-da-da, which is great. Okay, are we ready? Are we really ready? Okay, so this is our fifth year in a row to go for a world record. 77 is the number of heads to beat. We are hoping to shave 179 heads simultaneously in the one location. Isn't that it, Anna?
Correct. So people mustn't start shaving until they hear the klaxon.
Okay, so simultaneously, is that the same time for you, sir? At the same time. Barbers, are you ready? Shavees, are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you glad you're part of Shave or Die 2014?
Yeah.
Five. How does this work? Hold on, how does this work? That one, okay.
Wait, it is, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Five, four, three, two, one. 77 is the current record.
77 was the current record.
Yeah, and who made that and where were they?
That was in Australia last year, also for a cancer charity. Now, there were 179 of you here and 179 barbers. So, did I have to disqualify anybody? No, because you all achieved the Guinness World Record! Congratulations!
Ladies and gentlemen, we are record breakers! We are record breakers! There you go, record number 5. Well done, you! Well done, you! The most head shaved simultaneously achieved by the Radarsy Show listeners as part of today's event, Shave or Die 2014, in Dublin, Ireland, the 21st of February 2014. There it is! Wow! There it is! Celebrations!
So on behalf of Guinness World Records, I just wanted to thank you all because you are all officially amazing. Congratulations.
And the biggest thank you of the day goes to you, our barbers, and those people who volunteered their heads and their hair. Thank you very much. That's it. Good luck. We've done it again.
Woo-hoo! 5-4-3, double-0. Woohoo! Up you go. 5-4-3.